There we go.
I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Marion.
And I just want to acknowledge Scott and Tarek and the other people that have put in so much coffee makers, food gatherers. Let's stand up if you're on the committee to put this together. Or have anything to do with helping. Well, everybody can stand up, but you know what I mean? I know that they put in a lot of hard work to put this together this weekend, and we just acknowledge your service and your heart for what you do here, and it's just so beautiful. And I was thinking about you know, Mark H, and I never met the man. Mm-hmm. Never met him, and just knowing Peter and being alongside of him, you know, Don P and Joe H and even Tony, his first sponsor, that, you know, there's people that we have that are heroes in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember when I had a same home group for 20 years, and right before I came in, there was a great man in that group named Cal Connolly. And I heard of him my whole entire sobriety, and I had like this resentment. It was like, great, he died before I came in. And you know, and but there's just so much of what we do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that echoes in the lives of other people, that the things, the great teachings that people pass on to others, that we do for fun and for free. And I don't know, just like being in this monastery with the richness of 80 years of monks being here and being in prayer, you know, that's the same thing that happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we just give it along for fun and for free. I used to have this friend, Jack, who he would love things that I said or love things that other people say. He goes, I'll give you credit 3 times, but then after that, it's mine, you know, and things like that, you know, and so much was just learned by that. And so God, I just honor our elders and the people that freely gave it away to us so that we could carry that same message of hope to alcoholics that still suffer. And, you know, there's some beautiful stuff that even happened during the break, some people sharing stories with me and their journey of spirituality and God and church and all that. And also to see someone reach out to the newcomer and say, hey, you know, there's 2 groups that were born of this. Of this big book experience here. We meet on, what'd you say, Monday night and Thursday night, and to be able to feel connected, for that newcomer to go, hey, I'll recognize people right away when I come in. Immediately, my whole body was filled with God bumps. I call them God bumps. I don't call them goosebumps. I call them God bumps. But just seeing that connection happen. You know, we don't have to be alone on this journey. We are not meant to be alone. And it is a disease of loneliness. And we just have to reach out our hand. And going back to the responsibility statement is for the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. So I love that. I just wanted to acknowledge that. And I found a little, oh shucks, did I just lose it? Oh, I hope I didn't. I think I did. Oh man. This might take a second, so stay with me. I got all these pictures of the retreat. I'm gonna get there, I promise. It's another Mother Teresa. Let no one ever come to you without leaving better and happier. Be the living expression of God's kindness. Kindness in your face, kindness in your eyes, and kindness in your smile. So, you know, when you were talking about that, of being here and honoring the sacred space, and, you know, it has been a run. You know, we worked really hard in the trenches and the jobs that we do, and not only that, with the sponsees that I do after 4 o'clock every day, you know, not during the day, that's my job, but then what I do when I pick up the phone after, and it's, you know, relapse and death and, you know, the places that this horrible disease and beautiful disease, because we wouldn't even meet each other, you know, takes us. And, you know, I came here kind of beat up this weekend, and not knowing till I got to the airport that I was coming to a monastery, you know, was like, oh, God has brought me exactly where I need to be, you know? And he always does. He always just shows up right on time. So it's felt very restful for me, even though we're here and we're teaching and we're pouring out. I feel like I've received so much from you as well, and your connectedness and your... I had a friend who used to say this in music when we would play. It's like this exchange. It's a circle. You know, it's just like the music goes out and it comes right back. And just as we echo our experience, strength, and hope to you, I feel like we're just getting it right back. So I go home with my belly full of spirit and love and kindness and connectedness. And I always feel like when we leave these things, it's like it's hard too at the same time. It's like going to camp, you know. I never went to camp when I was a kid because we couldn't afford it. But you know, I mean, you know my story. But you know, but you know, like later on in years when I could afford to do that on my own, and you make these great friendships and you make these great connections, and then you're saying goodbye and you're exchanging phone numbers and you're saying, I'll see you, you know, should we meet as we charge the road of happy destiny, right? So it has been such an honor to be here, and such a beautiful healing experience, such a beautiful connection experience, and I go home a better person. I go home rested. I go home feeling like you guys have filled me. So I just thank you for that today.
Thank you.
Practice these principles in all our affairs. I have no principles and have too many affairs. With that, we'll go home. What principles to practice in all our affairs? And I think we get to experience the principles laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, God principles, carrying a vision of God's will into all our activities, not the ones we think are convenient or when someone's watching. It's easy to be a guru during an hour in a meeting or when you know AAs are around. But how am I doing when no one's around? How am I doing when I'm driving in my car, when I'm at the public shopping market or at work with coworkers, etc.? How am I doing? How's my speech? You know, not outwardly, but what's my speech, my internal dialogue with others? Do I offer an olive branch to those who I know would rather see harm come to me? And God's principles, practicing in all means all my affairs. Does that mean we're angelic and we're raised above everyone? No, but we do rise above the things that are troublesome because of the principles we have become internalized. So like some of us, I'm sure, in this room, have had people who throw arrows at you just for who you are. You know, they just look at you and they see Satan, and there's nothing you can do about that. So I've had recently and in the past, a couple of gentlemen were just saying the most God-awful things about me, which I can handle, but they started to go after the men I sponsor. And this one particular guy was going after even the woman in my group because I was a member of the group. And so I had a little phone call to him about, you know, why don't you leave the newbies alone? And this is your problem with me. And he was just going on a rant wherever he went about just assassinating my character and just saying vicious, awful things. And so what do I do with that? You know, practice these principles on my affairs. My books is not to be served while they're scraping. I don't bow before anyone except God. So I would write inventory, and discuss with my sponsor and practice prayer of forgiveness. In order to heal, we need to practice forgiveness. Forgiveness of my past, forgiveness of the wrongs you've done. Practice the spirit of forgiveness so we can heal. And what I always like to do is be a builder of bridges. And again, without bowing to anyone or being servile or scraping, I believe that you build a bridge and you offer the olive branch. And if they don't take it, they don't cross over the bridge, that's now on them. I'll even offer to carry over the bridge I built. And so I've done that many times. And three times I was met with some resistance still, but I've been able to move on. I had, from a distance, there was a man who does a lot of this, and I would listen to him, and I saw him speak, and I was much impressed with what he had to say. And I wanted to meet him. I wanted to have coffee with him and tell him how much I love what you have to say. But we got to be, how's it go? False prophets. Beware false prophets. And this same gentleman, for some reason, had accused me of making money off of Alcoholics Anonymous, which couldn't be further from the truth. And began to, you know, gossip and spread just terrible things about me in certain halls. And I got wind of it, and I was hurt, really hurt by it. And I was sharing with my sponsor, you know, this guy's sober forever, and if at the very least he would call me over if I did do something like that, hey, kid, we don't do that here. Okay, sorry, turn the page. But it's the worst when you get accused of something you didn't do. So I was at a conference, and I went over to him to build a bridge and explain to him, you really got the wrong guy, because what you're saying wasn't me. And in his most pompous, arrogant AA cop delivery, I offered an olive branch and that I didn't have to, and build a bridge that I really wasn't required to do, but that's how God made me. And he pretty much stood there with his arms folded and pretty much snubbed me and walked away. And now that's on him. And a buddy of mine says, you know, you owe that dunk fella an amends, and you need to do some inventory on that. And he said, well, I don't do that. And so that's on him. That's practicing for me principles in all my affairs. See, it's easy for me to love you if I know you really care about me and love you, but how do I do with my enemies? That's the real test, the litmus test of how I'm doing. When I know you are saying bad things about me, and I'm still going to practice love and tolerance. I'm not going to be a fool, but practice love and tolerance. And that's how God has allowed me to live. And did it hurt me? Yes. A lot. My heart hurt. I remember talking to Marion about it, and I felt foolish when it was done. I felt cheap when it was done. But I at least I can say, hey, I offered the olive branch. And I look at, you know, world affairs. Well, we have enough war. We have war all over. We have war in our own religious communities. We have warring theologians in AA. And so let me be guilty of trying to stop that. And so that's what I do. And sometimes you pay the price and sometimes you don't. But as that scripture says by the same author of that book that you just gave away, I bleed willingly and joyfully. There have been times, so practicing these principles, God's principles that are laid out in this book, and all the tools I get to use. And for me, the crossover was where I didn't have to remember it's who you be now. And so I try to be a son to my dad and a brother to my brothers and hopefully a good partner with Marion and a good worker and do all the things. And I'd fall short. I mean, you know, I'd be a liar. I said I'm good at everything. I still don't feel after 27 years I'm a really good sponsor. I give my all. And then there are people who are just gifted with sponsorship. They just do it. And I always feel like I'm not that good, but I try. And part of practicing principles, all my affairs, that I'm not perfect. I'm flawed. And there's more work to be done. And I embrace that. And I'm always still, thank the good Lord, still teachable after all these years. Very teachable, in fact. And I chase down the message. I chase down the elders. I gobble up books. I love the effect produced by God. I want to sit with pastors. I want to sit with priests. I want to sit with rabbis. I just want to talk and hear what they have to say. And being made teachable is part of these practicing these principles. Now, there have been times, by the way, and I remember one time in particular, I was doing one of these workshops alone in upstate New York. And how do you phrase this? Your question, what's this all about? I'm out speaking a lot, 25, 30 weekends a year. Am I supposed to be doing this? Is where God wants me? Is it really worth it? Is anyone listening? Where am I going? You know, after all of this, I'm still, you know, I'm not a rich man. Rich in here, but my bank account's not going to impress anyone. I don't really have a big education. Where am I going? And I would question me being behind a podium and delivering a message. Is God, this what you really want from me? Or am I supposed to be doing something else? Have I become attracted to this stuff? And I'm here to report to you that I know folks out there who would sell their soul to get on the circuit, just to give a talk and be popular. I know guys like this, and it turns my stomach. This is sacred work. And that hasn't gotten to me. When God says, Pete, now I need you away from the podium, I'll embrace that as well. I'm just grateful, like Marin, to have a seat here. But God has me doing this. This is where he's called me to do a lot of work. But I questioned it. And I remember being up behind the podium and sharing this with the group. I don't even know if I'm supposed to be here this weekend. You know, not this week, in this particular time. Because I'm not really sure if this is the call. And what I have found out, the call is the call. And part of that is you will question it. You will wonder, is this where I'm supposed to be? But when you're called, you're called. And there are people who do certain things. The brothers who, this is a calling. Civilians don't just say, I'm going to become a monk and go into this kind of environment the remainder of my days. That's a calling. And there are certain callings we have in AA. You know, there's folks who are just doing service, putting together conferences, involved in DCM work, and us AAs go, I can never do that. Of course not. They're just called to do that. And when we enter the gates of AA, God says, I need you here, and I need you there, and you sit in the back, you sit up. There's callings, and God will give us the tools to work with. So, but I questioned it, and there were times over 27 years I wondered if God was even listening to me. I'm divorced. I'm broke. Do you realize how broke I am? I have no money, and I can't get a job. Are you paying attention to me? And you start to think that that thinking overshadows God's great love. That it's not time. Just be still. And we don't like to wait. Just be still. Peter, I was patient with you. You need to be patient with me. I have good things for you. And just when you think those doors are going to close and it's locked down, the window opens up and he says, come with me. And you walk into the light and you say, wow. Okay, God, you got your eye on me. And I've dumped my script a few years ago. I had a beautiful script of my life. I'm rich, by the way. And I have a car for each day of the week. I have a thing for shoes. If you haven't noticed, I love black suede shoes, all sorts of shapes and size. I had a whole row of those. You know. And Mary and I travel the world for fun and for free on vacation. And I just spent money, and I had this, and I live happily ever after. And I never die, by the way. That was my script, and I dumped that script because then I can't hear. And I'm always looking over the fence. I'm always sniffing around and tempted. So I dumped that script. And but there were times where I was wondering if God was paying attention. And my honesty about that to my sponsor, my honesty to God, Father, are you listening to me? I'm really hurting. I mean, I'm not sure which way to go here. And God's always listening. But it's my returning back to the Father. It's my returning back to him with my struggles and my tears as well as my joys. That is the behind the scenes of practicing these principles in all our affairs. So if you see me at the grocery market being kind, you say, oh, he's practicing these principles. But how did I get to be kind in a grocery store? It's my weeping at the altar. We're the only place to go to. And there's it's in here somewhere. And it says, Jesus, I trust in you if that's your God. Which is my mantra. And I know it's hers. It's the behind the scenes work. It's sitting down writing the inventory when you really don't want to write inventories. You rather seek vengeance. And I write the inventory and call my sponsor. I'm going to kill this guy. And in that, being teachable because you want to get out of that because you know it's poison. I was lighting candles. I still do. I'm just a regular church goer now. But I would go to church once a week and light two candles, one for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms and one for my mom from early on in sobriety. And I was living in Brooklyn, Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And I went into church like I would, you know, just go in there. light a couple of candles, make some prayer, be still, and leave. And as I'm walking out, I hear, "Hey, Pete," from down the block, and it's an AA guy. And he's "What's going on?" I'm just going to church, lighting a couple of candles. And he said what that young fella did on the phone with me with the Series 7. He says, "You really do this?" He got to see me doing what I say I do. So you never know who's watching you. Do you ever observe someone on the street where they're doing something, they think no one sees them? I said, "Oh my God, this is Joe from AA. He just gave a talk last night. He's trying to pick up that young lady. He thinks no one's around. You got your eye on him." Then we love to go gossip and tell everybody, "Guess who I saw?" Now, if I spot Joe and he thinks no one looks at him, isn't it possible someone sees me when I think they're not looking at me? Right? So first we do that because we don't want to be caught in an awkward position. But the conversion is, I don't have to worry about that anymore. And I got to be really honest with you. And I know it sounds maybe like I'm trying to self-importance or whatever. My life is really an open book. I got no secrets. You can catch me here. You can see me there. You can catch me there. You can see me there. It's the same. What you got is what you see is what you get. You know, I'll get angry. I'll get sad. I'll get goofy. And I'll cry. But you won't catch me in a place I'm not supposed to be. And you won't see me doing something that I really shouldn't be doing. I lived off of that for years. It was too much poison, too much hurt. So I get to practice principles in all my affairs. And lastly, you know, the affairs that I have are his. He gave me a job. He gave me a relationship. He gave me a family. He gave me you. He puts money in my pocket. He gives me some social life. He gives me some activities. You know, those are the affairs. My social life is pretty much Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, other than family, maybe a few coworkers, my friends, I have no non-AA friends. They're strange people out there, civilians. They're weird. That's just the way it is. And I'm so glad it's that way, because I couldn't imagine life without Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine a life without having a sponsor and getting to do these things. And I go to bed at night, and it might have been a difficult day at work, and maybe there's some financial concerns or just concerns for family members. My brother just came out of a cycle that he has extreme bipolar, and we finally got his medication fixed, and he just came out of a horrible cycle. He goes to bed with concerns about loved ones. But I don't go to bed anymore going, "Oh my God, if I get found out, I'm dead." Mm-hmm. Or I don't wake up the next morning going, "Oh my God, how am I going to cover my tracks on this one?" Mm-hmm. And that is freedom. You know? So I'm just so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope to continue practicing these principles in all my affairs, and those who accuse me of not, that's on them. I pray for them, bless their hearts, and I move on, chop wood, carry water. I think I was telling Scott or someone, you know, my first sponsor I met in Brooklyn, he was a beacon at the end of on the top of a hill. Then I get to spend time with Mark and Joe and Don and Gary, and I speak on the phone with Paul Martin a few times before he passed. And to be part of that rich lineage, and knowing that they're all attached to one of our co-founders, that makes no sense. I'm a punk from Brooklyn, punk kid from Brooklyn. I was a nice kid growing up. I became a punk, and how do you get to do this? That makes no sense. It doesn't add up. One and one doesn't equal two here. But in God's world, all the saints were sinners. And so we were born to, I'll close with this, my sponsor reminds me all the time, we were born to be saints, start acting like it. So that's all I got. Thank you.
I was thinking about a couple different situations where I got caught doing the wrong thing. And I used to... You know, I played music, and people knew who I was, where I lived, and, you know, all this stuff. And I remember one day I was at the post office, and I was in line, and I was like, it was gross. Like, I was in ick mode. You know, it was just, it was awful. And it was, the line was too long, and it was, I was way too late, and I was way overworked, and I was way overtired, and I was way all this stuff. And I'm in line, and I am completely being loud and jerky, being a jerk. And this man, a couple people ahead of me, turns and looks at me, goes, "Oh, you're Marion Weston, aren't you?" And instantly I was like, Yeah, I am. I am. And you know, immediately I made amends. I said, you know what? My behavior right now has been awful. And I, you know, I made amends right there in the post office line. You know, it was just like really, really crazy. And oh my gosh, now the other one, it has just totally slipped my mind. What was the other one? Say something really quick and fill the air while I talk. Why think about it?
Did you hear the one about the farmer and the lonely house?
It's gonna pop back into my mind when I oh yeah, so I knew it. So what I do have a little tiny bit, you know, one of my little defects is I like to buy clothes. I like to shop. I do. Okay. What woman doesn't, right? You know, take it to the altar. And I was out one day, you know, it kind of fixes me a little bit if I can go and find something on sale. I had a little bit of money with a little bit of a plan is I'm just going to go buy me a new shirt. I'm going to go do something. And you know, you can go down Sample Road in South Florida and any given intersection, you can see somebody standing there with a sign. And I had this little bit of cash and I get to one intersection, there's somebody with a sign and so I give him a little bit of cash, and I still had some. And I get to another intersection. There's someone with a sign. I give them some. And I turn around. I come back around, and I go over to this other store in this little strip mall. Florida's got strip malls everywhere. And I go into this store, and I don't find anything, and I come out. And this beautiful old man is sitting there on the bench and says, you know, ask me for some money. And I was like, no, I'm sorry, I already gave. And I kept walking, and I just stood there in the parking lot, turned around and went, you complete and total jerk. You know, I thought because I gave to the first one, because I gave to the second one, that obviously I've given plenty. And just like you, God just put it on my heart at that moment. It was like, here's the rest. I don't need another shoe. You know what my closet looks like. It's a mess, you know. But it was just in that moment, you know. It's not like, yeah, practicing these principles in all our affairs, but no, we don't do it perfect. None of us do it perfect. Mm-hmm. But just being caught in those moments of not doing the right thing. And I say that to women all the time, you know, try to anyway practice these principles in all my affairs. If you don't have a God, borrow mine. You know, if you want to know how to live sober, follow me around, you know. And we just, you know, like Peter always says, you know, just being that light to someone, being the beacon on the hill, you know, a place of refuge where people can turn to go no matter what they're going through, that they can lean on us. And so that was the story. Hey, I came back.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to have some Q&A, is that what we're doing?
Sure.
Okay. So
going
we'll shift
right
over
into
to
it.
Some Q&A and then we'll pack up and hit the road. Mm-hmm. Anyone have any questions? Sir?
How did you come into contact with Mark being so far away? How did
that Mark was doing Fellowship of the Spirit in Queens, New York with Joe Hawk, and he did it with this guy Dave F. as well. And a buddy of mine in Staten Island, this guy Tom N., handed me, he had met Mark at one of these events that Mark was speaking at, and he had some cassettes. For you new folks, we actually had cassette tapes before. And I listened to his talk, and my immediate reaction was, what a pompous, arrogant SOB, who is this guy? But I listened to it again, and I listened to it again, and he was disturbing me. I didn't like his delivery, but I loved the message, and that changed where I said, I need to meet this man, I love this man. And so he was up through Fellowship of the Spirit, and he was staying at a friend of mine's home when we had that experience with the 1, 2, and 3 thing. And with that guy who came in. They walked into the steps, and I asked my friend, can you tell Mark I get some time with him? And it was an afternoon. I went over, and I sat down, and I asked him, he said, I've been waiting for you. And he said, you look tight. What's going on? I told him my first sponsor and what's been going on. I'm writing inventory, but my sponsor's not holding me accountable, and I need a teacher. And he says, are you ready to have your whole life turned upside down? And I says, I guess. I mean, you know. And, one thing about him, we got real close, really close. And he was, I loved, I still do, men who were sure. No wavering. He was sure. He gave me information. He was sure. And he had a way of doing it. And we began the journey. And it wasn't only steps. It was spiritual information that he just kind of got the jaws of life and pried me wide open. And so that's in a nutshell, a condensed version of how we met. And then I meet Joe through Mark because they were buds. And I went out to speak at Fellowship of the Spirit in Colorado, in Denver, not Denver, somewhere in Colorado. And Mark and Joe said, we told Don you're coming out there, and he's waiting to visit with you. Make sure you get to him. And I had a, when Don, it was like Elvis has entered the building when Don P. would walk in. I mean, he was swarmed by folks. And so he says, I knew you were coming, I heard about you, and Mark and Joe told me, so quick story. But he swarmed, he says, he pulls me aside, he says, meet me out in the front around 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's okay. And he would drive up in his big, like this big van, truck, and he took out his portable beach chair. And so I sit down, it's just me and Don P. You could hear the angels in the background. And we sit down, and he takes out the chair. Within 5 minutes, hey Don, that was the end of that meeting because there were about 100 people outside early day. Don's outside. And that's the kind of effect he had on people. But we got to speak greatly. So I was introduced to all of these folks, and Don was helping me with step work. I love his stuff on step 9. And then I meet Gary Brown, who's just a joy to still see now. When we meet at conferences, and Gary was sponsoring me for a while after Mark passed, and Don had passed, and we got really close for a while, and Gary shared with me about some of his financial struggles, and I wasn't alone, and so it's just incredible, the lineage I was introduced to. Anybody else?
Ask a question. I want to be a spiritual warrior, as you mentioned in your talks, and I know that part of that could mean taking heat. And how do I share in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous without and I know sharing the message and being clear without going too far. Because I know I'm going to take heat, but
don't be a spiritual warrior. Be an agent for God, and let Him turn you into the warrior He needs, which will be a spiritual warrior. If you follow me on that, let me say it another way. I want to be a spiritual warrior. You're going to a fight already. Don't be a spiritual warrior. Be an agent for God, which makes me teachable and take this information in, and then God will say, now go be a warrior on His terms. And therefore, you don't have to worry about the words you speak. It'll be the Father who gives you the words to speak and also give you His armor to wear if it does come back at you. See, if we're in charge of this speaking, then we have a fear problem. How am I going to do this? You just go speak. The armor of God will keep you safe and protected, plus you're delivering His words. Just follow that part. Good.
And our job, too, is just like to just I sponsored women for years, and I'd listen to them talk about their boyfriends all night long, you know. You know, listen to them talk about, oh, honey, and I just, you know, love on them and pat them on the back. It's okay if you do that step work later on. I love you, though, you know. And it took me a long time to really just get to the place of disturbing their illness and being able to just stand up to them and go, you know what, you're going to get drunk over this. And, you know, my job isn't always to be nice. And you know what I mean? You can do it in love and kindness. And so many of those people, like Peter talks about, you know, walk softly and carry a big book, and you can say, they send these little zingers to people in love and kindness. You can.
But God be in charge of that, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
But it's great your willingness to want to go do that and suit up and show up. See, half of it's done. Half of that journey is already there. I want to go do this stuff. I want to go shop for them. Good God will give you the stuff you need. Yes, sir.
See if I can kind of phrase this question up. So sometimes people share in a meeting, or as an example, maybe sharing your story with us, and they see when they compare their own story. So in other words, the individual didn't live on the streets, the individual didn't pace behind the grocery store, you know, the individual didn't lose everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I can hear people going, well, it wasn't that bad. So the ego begins to rebuild. And they begin to see that, well, I didn't have that desperation. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm okay.
Got this.
And so when you're working with someone and they begin to start to compare their story to others, they can sometimes shut down the spirit. So I'm interested in hearing, you know, how you address that in the individual.
Well, I'm not responsible for what they do. I can't get in the way of someone's bottom. But my instructions are, identify, don't compare, and you could always lock into the end of someone's run, the emotional bottom, Park Avenue, park bench. Mm-hmm. And to illustrate, two stories. I was in the Three Legacies meeting. Friday night meeting, 300-400 people at this meeting. And I'm pinned against the wall in the back because I don't feel worthy enough to even sit in a chair, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And this guy gets up there, and he looked like Sigmund Freud. Bow tie, beard, balding, and elderly man. And I'm saying, oh, God. You know, I need some young Turk up there who did my life. And he was a professor. And he talked about that. And I was having a problem locking in with him. I never went to college. This guy was very educated. And then he started to talk about growing up with an alcoholic mom and his humiliation, degradations that he experienced. He wasn't homeless. But he talked about that stuff. And I always share about this man because I never saw him since. And he may even passed on by now. But when he was speaking, I was in Midwest, Northeast. He grew up like I did. And at the end of his story, he experienced the same feelings I was experiencing. So if we're looking and listening, we will find it's when we automatically shut down. But we listen to the end of someone's story, where the pain got that great, who cannot identify with that? Whether it's Park Avenue, Park Bench. And there was a gentleman came to this treatment center. I was in Minnesota, and he was a broker, and he had a clean-cut Joe All-American suspenders. You know, these fancy suspenders that the brokers wear, and these really expensive suits, and these wingtip shoes. I said, I don't identify with this guy. They don't dress like that where I'm from. And he starts off his story, and he's got a college ring on. I mean, you know, so now I'm jealous because I don't have one of those. And and then he's talking about his cocaine and alcohol runs and where he wound up at the end. I didn't see suspenders and college ring and wingtip shoes. I saw me. Mm. So it's the end always. you know, and sometimes some cats are just not going to identify, and so what? You can't do anything about that. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say my wonderful sponsor told me in the beginning, I had to do some of my beginning meetings in Palatka, Florida, in a very small town, and she told me, look for the similarities, don't look for the differences, and these people on paper were completely opposite from me, and I always could see similarity. That's something good to say to a sponsor. It helped me a lot.
Well, and then always. And one more thing on that saved me, and I loved in the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when I first came in. And I don't know if people just say this. I love old AA quotes. I just love them. And one of the things they told me, you know, is I'm for myself. It's like I am no better than anybody else. And I am no less than anybody else. And Alcoholics Anonymous, and the part that's in the book is that says we can at once, you know, look the world in the eye. And we're all on an even playing field coming in.
Yeah.
And it's like that's something I carried around with me my whole entire life. I'm the poor girl who didn't have much and looked at my feet, you know. No. Head up, shoulders square, and I have just as much right to be in the room, but I am no better than anybody either. Mm-hmm. So...
Yes.
So most of my teachers are men and in this room, and very direct, full of love, but very direct, not afraid of hurting one's feelings. And that truth and honesty has changed my life. Right, so I see the value in it. And women who have been around for a while, you know, I can be that way with them. But for some reason when brand new women come to me, I have this like fear of hurting their feelings or scaring them off when, you know, it doesn't work. You know what I mean? Clearly they need to hear I needed to hear the truth when I first came in, and the truth saved my life. So what's that look like for you? Like, I mean, and maybe it's belief systems around women and men. I know I have some old belief systems around probably women especially, but men too. I feel like I have to like coddle them, but like I know in my mind that's not the right thing to do, or at least it wasn't for me. If I had been, maybe I wouldn't be here right now. So what does that look like for you when you get these brand new women? Like, do you have to be more gentle with them than you would be with men, or am I just like my babying women because of some old belief systems that are lies?
Wow, that's a really, really good question. My experience has showed me that, you know, there are, you know, still goes back to, there's a lot of great men that are in the big book. And in the fellowship I was in, there wasn't a lot of old-timer women there.
Right.
And I had a lot of brothers in the fellowship. I still love a good old-timer, old man, crusty old man in the back of the room. I love that. He knows. I mean, give me them. You know, and I mean that with so much, so that's not a bad, I mean, that's probably a bad way of saying that. I love them. They were great teachers. They taught me how to be a lady and to respect myself and, honey, your shirt's a little tight or whatever it is, and just wonderful, love me to life. But what I had to do with women, I mean, it was a significant change in my life. Hopefully this doesn't turn into a long story. But I was, and I call this sponsee collectors. Oh, she's a sponsee collector. You know, because we want to be the popular one that's got 100 women that we're sponsoring. And a lot of times, you know, we're not really doing them any service. It's like, oh, wow, I've got all my women, and we all sit together at a meeting and whatever. But if I'm doing it from a place of, I've got one more sponsee calling me to add to me, I don't know if that makes any sense to you at all. But also being able to share from a place of experience that, yes, we are talking about your boyfriend again, and yes, you know, I understand that hurts. But my experience has showed me that we don't get into the book, if we don't get into the steps, that all I'm doing is enabling you to stay in your disease. And that's something I've just kind of passed on. Hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. in the treatment center business, men are so much easier than women. Women are just, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, you know. That's just kind of the way we are. That's the creature that we are. And then there was also the barrier that if I don't like this about her, what is it a reflection of what I don't like about me, you know? And I found the more that I can embrace women and that I can commune with them and that I can work with them is a direct reflection of how I'm feeling about me, you know, in some ways. So I don't know if that anyway answered your question, but...
Yeah, so... So... I guess So do I worry about hurting their feelings or scaring them off? I feel like the answer is no, but... You know.
So I would just be honest. Like, I'm worried about, I'm all about that, you know. Yeah. I'm little miss, oh my gosh, I don't want to hurt anybody's feeling. I want you to love me. Don't we all just love each other? Trust me, he knows. He hears me day in and day out on that.
Would stuff. You rather step on their toes or stand on their grave?
I love that one.
So what was given to you, you pass on. If you get into the feelings business, become a therapist.
You're here.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. See, that's what guys do. It took me 7 minutes to answer your question. He goes right straight for the juggler. Right straight for the juggler. That's what they do, you know. He does not pretty up a junkyard, you know.
You know, in the book where it says nothing will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work when with other alcoholics, it works when other activities fail. For a long time, I used that line, and I would be a sponsee collector. And I thought if I did enough 12-step work, it excused me from 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. And I know there is a philosophy in people that say, well, you never say no if somebody asks you to sponsor them, mm-hmm. and God will provide the time or whatever. But from what I've seen through other people in my own experience is the other, you know, the people don't get the attention they should, and sometimes they fall off. I know I can't keep anybody sober or get anybody drunk, but I can be more effective or mm-hmm. less effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I do now is, like right now, I have 3 sponsees, and that's good for me. Mm-hmm. If God put somebody into my life, I wouldn't necessarily say no or yes, but I would almost interview them, see if I could be of help, and, you know, see what time they needed and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, are you of the philosophy you just say yes no matter what, and mm-hmm. God provides, or, you know... If I don't do my own work, then I'm not going to be good to anybody else.
Yeah.
And I have my own limitations, and there's 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, there's never enough hours in a day. If I could change the clock and have more. My sponsor sponsors a lot of women, and I sponsor probably too many women, too. I know that if I'm in an AA meeting, and if I would have heard a woman speak, that it hit my heart, and it just was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And that woman, and if I would ask that woman for her phone number to sponsor me or whatever, and she said no, that would have been hard.
Well, I never say no to
phone number
talking to me, or I'll give them to somebody.
But
else.
I have gone back and forth with that, you know, where it's like, oh my God, some meetings I'll raise my hand, some meetings I don't raise my hand, you know, and I think that, quite honestly, if it's a brand new woman and you raise your hand and they get your number, 8 times out of 10 they won't call anyway because they're too afraid to pick up the phone. So at least, you know, you were there to do it. And sometimes cool, like if you've got some time in the program and, well, I really don't have time for that, but one of the girls I sponsor could sponsor you. That is an awesome way to do it. If you got, you know, limitations and you can only sponsor 3, but if you can get those 3 women sponsoring women and then those women sponsoring women, then you've got this whole, like,
right,
you know, club going on.
That's what I do. I'm thinking of one person in particular, but I think that it can be harmful to the sponsees when you just let you. I don't know if I'm expressing it.
No, well, I get you.
What I've taken on a lot over the years, and I try to limit because of my effectiveness. And but it always goes back to when we're not sure, we call our sponsor and say, "Hey, sponsor, should I take on one more?" I was approached by somebody. I need to. That's what, one of the reasons I have a sponsor. I said, "How many do you have, Pete?" "I have six." He says, "Pass them on to one of your guys." And what happens to me a lot is because there's CDs of me out there, guys come to me because they want to say Peter Marinelli is my sponsor. There's an attachment to that. And I can see how willing they are when I say, "Go see Joe, I sponsor Joe. He's got the same information." "Oh, may go somewhere else." So did they really want to do this work? I was, when I was in the midst of that divorce, my chin was on the floor, and I had called Mark, and he says, "How many guys you got?" I says, "Well, I'm working with about six of them. Where are they in the steps?" And he told me to, he used the word funnel a couple out to guys you sponsor right now, because you're not going to be effective. You can't keep a couple close to the nest that are new. The guys were like what he called low maintenance. They can refer to somebody. They can go to one of your guys and like that, because you're not going to be effective right now. You're holding on for dear life. And I was in what I now know was a depression, situational depression, was tough times. So what about, go to the sponsor. "Hey, I got this new lady. What do you think I should do about this one? Should I take her on or not?" You know. And if you don't, it doesn't mean they're going to get drunk. See, what we tend to do is, if I don't sponsor them, they're never going to get it. You know, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
Part B of my question is really just yes or no. You know, the seven questions that Mark had are, you know, do you want to live?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
No, I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about, Scott, don't you? You know those seven questions? Do you want to, Tara does.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask if you use them, but apparently you don't.
No, I'm not familiar with them, sorry.
Okay.
Anybody else? Good question, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah. What considerations would you offer to someone like me, who's been sober for a long time, done the steps a few times, but I have these persistent belief systems, like I'm not good enough, that will go away for a while, and then they come back.
Mm-hmm.
Like what, how can you approach it a different way so that I can, I don't know, it's, why is it here again?
So, I'm not sure if I'm fine. How can I approach what a different way?
The belief system.
Your belief system. How can you approach the belief systems?
Yeah.
Are you, okay. Are you tired of living this way?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what you want to do is have someone who's on with the facts first get a sponsor. And then what you do is, you in prayer, you surrender this stuff. If this isn't working for you, there's a payoff to it, though, for you. That's why you're still in it. There's a little payoff. I don't have to do the work. I can still stay sick because I got these belief systems. So that's why I ask you, are you out of road with this? And if you truly are, and only you know if you are, then why? What's stopping you from going to God, take this from me? And then begin the work with the sponsor. And when that stuff starts to kick up, I write inventory on that. I talk to my sponsor and I pray about it. I don't think there's anyone in this room who hasn't had an experience of feeling worthless. And they're not good enough.
Yeah. Is that a principle inventory?
Okay. I'm sorry?
Is it a principle inventory or just how it shows up, the effects of it?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm writing resentment, me, cause. This is how I feel about myself. Fear. I'll never be able to pull this work off because this is how I feel about myself. Okay. In doing, I'm already succeeding. So my inventory might not be perfect. But I'm taking that kind of work, at that kind of effort to be changed. My prayers might miss a couple of words, but it's the fervor which I pray that changes me. So if I'm going home from here perhaps, I'm going to go into the room where I pray, and God, I'm throwing myself at the mercy of you. Please relieve me of this burden, because it's going to get me sick, it's going to get me drunk. Show me how to be of service to you. And then call up Mary or whoever it is and say, I'm ready to go through the work. Now, you begin the work. You can't look back anymore. You can't waver. When your mind says, I'm not worth it, it's not good enough, write more, read more, go work with another drunk.
Mm-hmm.
and which will be a good ticket for you out, because when you're working with a drunk who feels like that, you will start to see yourself in them, and as you're pulling them out, you're pulling yourself out. That makes sense? Okay, good. Sir?
Sometimes I have a real difficult time figuring out where intention stops and self-will starts.
When what?
Intention stops and self-will starts. Like, they always talk about intention, right? And I'm like, well, if I got too much intention in this, it's not really intention, it's me trying to play God.
Okay, can you tell me what you mean by intention?
Like intention in a prayer, intention in life, intention in that Wayne Dyer book we just got.
Okay.
You know, like setting an intention for my life, okay? If I set too strong or too, if I feel like my intention is too self-directed, I feel like I'm blocking myself off from where God wants me.
Okay, so with that kind of awareness, I feel like if my intention's too strong, so you know when it's too strong, don't you?
That's what I'm asking sometimes.
Those sometimes
yeah.
is what you have to listen to. It's now become a petition. That's when you're into self-will. See, what intention is what I'm offering, creative visualization, putting something out into the universe, embracing what God has to offer, seeing things, however you work with intention, all on the understanding that He's still in charge. And when I work with the power of intention, what I do is stop the self-denial. That's not the right way to say it. Denying me of what God has for me, because that's what we do. We put a lid on the box. So in intention, it allows me to embrace and get out of this bondage that I'm in. I was given great assignments with that, and a whole storyboard, a dream board, and all the stuff Mark had me do, pictures and everything. And what it simply did was allow me to even go for that and see that happening. Okay, whatever it was, or a spirit about me. All under the understanding it's His will, not mine. Now, when I'm doing this and I sense that I really want this, it's really for my benefit, and I'm starting to get that thing you just described, now I'm in self-will. And that's the one you shut down. At the end of the day, no matter what I throw out there, God's going to say yes and no. I have found for me this intention thing is very powerful, but what it does for me, again, is allow me to embrace something that I wouldn't even think about or consider. And just the first time I was given this, there was a little game they played with me. And they said to me, I'd like you to write down your dream job, something you would love to see yourself doing. And I wrote down being a therapist, seeing people, not necessarily addiction, but I always had juice for that field. And I was told, excuse my language, bullshit. I said, what do you mean? That's not what you want. Dream. What do you see yourself? Embrace that. Give yourself the permission. So I put down play center field for the New York Yankees. He said, now we got it. And that was what that did, was kind of break the lid off the box. And then we started writing down some things. And here's what went on. I don't like the Northeast. I like visiting the Northeast. I grew up in the Northeast. I don't like cold weather. I don't like the rhythm to the Northeast. And when I was in treatment, they said, you're really a Midwest boy. I don't like the Northeast. And I always loved, since I'm a kid, the South and Florida. There was something just right about Florida. I don't know why. Beyond what you see. It was just something, every time I went there, I felt safe. And I feel safe by the ocean. So I put down on this, I am living in South Florida. I am statements. I am running a treatment center, because I always wanted to do that. I am. While I'm doing this, I'm out of work and I have no money. Get a call. Would you like to relocate, come down to South Florida and run this program for me? I am living by the beach, on the beach. I have a house. I'm here. At the end of the hallway is the beach. I had a vision of something, this thing I would be driving, safe, comfortable. I'm driving that now. I had a vision. I love palm trees. I feel like I'm in the Bahamas or something. It's just safe. It's right for me. I'm surrounded by palm trees. Very silly things I'm offering you to some degree, but it was God's will. I offer that. I gave myself permission to see myself doing this. And God says, yeah, absolutely. Go. Now, if I said, and by the way, God, make sure I have 6 weeks vacation and, you know, this much bonus, this much salary, God said, now hold on, it's now you cross the line. I'm still in charge. Get it? So when you sense that, pay attention to it.
And I think that's piggybacking. So when you said dump the script earlier, is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Because my script was all about me. Think about it, riches, cars, all this. That was all about so I could feel more like a man. My attachments were, if I'm rich, I'm a real man. If I'm tough and don't cry, I'm a real man. If I have not a job, but if I have the most leverage in the company, I've arrived, I'm a real man. That does not make me a man. Okay. So is that so? And living happily ever after? I don't know. All of us want to live happily ever after, but maybe God's got some other plans. Maybe he's supposed to take me at an early age. I don't know. I can't get into that with him. Okay. Yes, ma'am?
Are you guys hard and fast on the, the guideline that alcoholics should only work with alcoholics, meth addicts with meth addicts, crack addicts with crack addicts, and so forth?
We both have a spin on that. I'm found myself most successful with alkies. A lot of it depends on how done they are. Mm-hmm. I don't know crackheads. I don't do that. I never did that stuff. Freebased a few times. It's a different rhythm. And I also have a responsibility to direct them to Cocaine Anonymous, maybe methamphetamine, and there's a fellowship in the city that stuff, and or simply Narcotics Anonymous. And that's not to drive anyone out of AA. It's so they can identify with another guy humming on a pipe for 8 hours looking out of a peephole. Right? Because I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I did a ton of drugs. And I don't want to sidestep your question. I prefer working with drunks. But when I do get the folks who have an addiction to another substance and they're in AA, and not a lot of them want to follow this, I'm not kicking anyone out of AA. Shoemaker, stick to thy last. And so I got a guy who's a full-blown crackhead. Shouldn't he be around other crackheads and cocaine heads for identification, especially when they're new? And if I need to talk about drugs at an AA meeting, is it possible I'm sitting in the wrong meeting? So that's the way I do it. I have a response. They come to my AAs, of course, come to AA. But they on the understanding that a few times a week you're parking your butt in CA or NA. Well, I don't like it there because it's too crazy. Good, then take this messenger, go there and fix it. You see that? And so that's how I do it.
Would you still take them through the steps?
I will work if they're willing to work with me. I have, let me think for a minute. I have three guys right now who are alkies who used a ton of heroin, a ton of it. I mean, they got the marks to prove it. So they do here, and they like CA better than NA. CA uses our book, and anything goes there. And so those are their instructions, and they're doing it, you know. If I get a guy's an alkie and did a ton of drugs, you know, I don't do that. But if I got the drug addict who drank a lot, He's got to visit that fellowship, and I'll take them through the work as best I can. Yeah.
I haven't till over the last few years. I've worked with a whole lot of heroin addicts.
Yeah.
And ton. And I never touched that stuff in my entire life. I always thought, oh, if I do that, I'm a drug addict. but I did a lot of other things, right? And just my point in this, and this is where it's a little different for us, I think, is that my job as a sponsor, regardless of absolutely everything, is get you completely independent from me and your hand in the hand of God. And so no matter, that's just me. It's like no matter what you're on, I mean, if you got a problem with food, I've taken women through the steps with eating disorders. I've taken them in through the steps with cutting disorders, you know. And they use the 12 steps in churches. And it's all about a relationship with God. So yeah, do. Take them through the 12, my opinion, take them through the 12 steps. Get them in a relationship with God. And then take that news to CA. Take that news to NA. Take that news to OA. Take that, you know, wherever it is. Because I didn't do meth doesn't mean that I don't know powerlessness. And that's just me. Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, we're out of time, man. Thank you.
It's a wrap.